A very warm welcome to you. This is Remember Palestine. I'm your host, Amina Taylor. Now we are your portal of information into all things Palestinians. And we'd like to think of ourselves as something as a beacon of resistance for those in the occupied territories and across the world in the diaspora. In this week's edition, the battle for water and ultimately the fight to survive. Many of us would take clean running water as a basic human right. Spare a thought then for the Palestinians forced to go without one of life's bare essentials, usually as those in illegal settlements develop so-called tourist attraction with water features prominently displayed. Once the preserve of all who use the land, the fight over scarce water sources has now become the new battleground. Farmers, families and businesses have had their activities crippled by the lack of vital H2O. Precious wells are brought under Israeli control or completely destroyed. We'll examine this and other issues in more details, as well as bringing you up to speed with the latest attacks on Gaza, where multiple casualties have been reported. But first, more on the issue of water shortages for Palestinians in this report from Ibrahim Husseini from the West Bank.
Famous for its high-quality, high-yield crops, Jenin District could very well be the fruit basket of Palestine. Here, tomatoes are grown in abundance. Prior to June 1967, Jenin exports of watermelons reached Syria and even Egypt. Increasingly after June 1967, Israel has restricted and more often cut water supplies to entire villages.
The water shortages in Palestine is very clear. If you travel anywhere in the West Bank, you can see these roof tanks because the people need to store water. Since 1967 until today, Israel did not approve a single permit for Palestinians to tap the groundwater or to dig a new well.
Israel's water policy was not limited to restricting water supply through water networks to Palestinian population centers. It stretched to reach long existing water resources such as natural springs. At the same time, prohibiting the drilling for water in underground aquifers. Deir Abu Da'if sits 6 kilometers to the east of Jenin and a short distance from the northern Jordan Valley. The village relies exclusively on agriculture. To this day, this village, along with 4 other villages, are not connected to the water network. Up till the second Intifada, water was purchased and transported to the villages by mobile water tanks. But then Israeli barriers have left the villages with no access to water. In 2003, Issam decided to dig for water, and since then the water supply has been stable. But earlier this month, the Israeli occupation forces moved to put an end to this. On June 7th, an Israeli force made up of about 80 men surrounded the village, then made its way here, where Issam said he had his well. 2 Israeli bulldozers began the destruction. Issam said that the well provided water for the village here and to several others, drinking water and water for irrigation as well. 6 other wells were destroyed in the area on that same day.
This is an agricultural village. There are no wells, no water resources, not for drinking, not for agriculture. The Israelis know this as well as the Palestinian Authority. We have no alternative to digging for water. We were surprised to see the Israeli bulldozers with no prior notice or even warning.
Issam says more than 17,000 individuals in 4 villages were left with no drinking water after the destruction of the wells. Farmers had to hurry with arrangements from nearby villages at high prices to save their crops. Livestock and chicken nurseries were at grave risk. According to environmentalists, individual consumption of water in the occupied Palestinian territories is about 1/6 of what individual consumption is in Israel. Reporting for Remember Palestine, Ibrahim Husseini, Jenin.
My studio guest is a journalist from Gaza, where he worked as a news producer for Ratama News Agency before working with the likes of Al Jazeera and others. Currently in London, completing his master's in international journalism, he's also a researcher with the Middle East Monitor. Welcome to the program, Mohtasem Dalul. We saw a little bit of what Ibrahim was saying here about the crippling effects of not being able to go about one's business as you would see fit, and water's being used as a vital mechanism in this thing. You're also a businessman, so you know about the economic effect of this. Explain a little, if you will.
Yeah. In fact, I want to say something in the beginning that the Israeli, the founders of the Israeli state in the late 19th century thought of the issue of water as a strategic factor for their long-term existence for the future.
So this isn't accidental? This is not an accident, the way in which these things have been strategically done.
Yeah, of course. That isn't, they have thought of this before 100 years. And during the British Mandatory in that region, they started to have franchises from the British government over some resources of some main resources of water at that area. And then in 1965, before the 1967 war, the Arabs decided to build some dams in the rivers around in that area. Israel targeted those projects and destroyed all the equipment used, and it has been preventing the Arabs to do such a project until today. And in the 1967 war, Israel controlled all the water resources in that area, among them the River Jordan and the basin of that river, the Yarmouk River, and all the basin of that river, itself alone, it consumes more than 60% of the overground water of the River Jordan, compared with Jordan, which most of the basin of that river in its soil, which consumes only 25%, and Syria consumes 15% of that water. And then in 1993, in the Oslo peace agreement between the Palestinian Liberation Organization and the Israeli side, this water issue remained with other major issues weren't figured out at that.
So no solution was
no
put on
solution.
The table?
Yeah.
And because it's a way of controlling the people, their movements, their ability to develop?
Yeah, they want to continue controlling the people from a sensitive area. Later on, in 1995, in Taba, what was known the transitional stage agreement between 1995 and 1999, which should have ended at 1999, the water issue, or the Palestinian and the Israeli sides agreed on setting up a committee to deal with the water issue. According to this committee, the Israeli side should have supplied the Palestinians with their needs of water.
Which isn't being done. We'll come back to this in a second. Make sure you stay there, Motassem, because as we discuss, this issue of water shortage for the Palestinians is something that even the United Nations has highlighted, with access to clean water being curtailed by settler activities. This report from the UN shows us just how dire the situation really is.
There are 56 water springs in the West Bank, in the vicinity of Israeli settlements that have become the target of settler activities. 30 of these springs have been taken over completely by Israeli settlers, while the other 26 are at risk of settler takeover. At least 84% of the springs affected by settler activities are located on land recognized by the Israeli Civil Administration as privately owned by Palestinians. In more than 70% of the springs, Israeli settlers have begun to develop the surrounding area into a tourist attraction. Ramallah has been the worst affected area in the West Bank by settler activities, with 18 springs being taken over by the settlers. Nablus was second in line, with Hebron being the least affected.
For more on this, we're joined by Zainab Al-Shalafi, and she works with LifeSource. They're an organization that helps to support the fight for water rights for Palestinians, and she's in Ramallah, according to our information there, the worst hit area for water issues in the region. Zainab, good to talk to you today. Just highlight for me, if you will, some of the major issues about this water crisis for Palestinians.
Yeah. Hi to everyone. So the first thing I would like to mention and the first important message is that Palestine is an area that very rich with the water resources. at least in the north and in the middle of Palestine, the rainfall averages is very high. In Jerusalem, for example, it's equal to the rainfall level in the long term for it in Berlin and in Ramallah, for it in Paris. And Palestine also like can be self-independent in water because it has got like really limited surface water, that the Jordan River and the seas, but an exceptional rate of the rainwater goes underground to the aquifers, the coastal aquifer under Gaza and the mountain aquifer under West Bank, and both are also like shared with Israel. So the main reason for the water shortage in Palestine is purely political reason, and Palestinians are preventing their right to water because of political reasons. The average Palestinian individual daily share is 50 liters, and the average Israeli individual is 300 liters. So Palestinians have like their daily share is half the minimum recommended by the World Health Organization. And to visualize how little is this amount, 50 liters, to take like a quick shower, you need 50 liters of water. To flush the toilet, you need 9 liters. And this is for pure political reasons. So just to mention about the unequal distribution, the main problem. The Israeli settlements in West Bank are laying over 80% of the water resources in West Bank, and Israel is taking third of its water consumption from West Bank. The wall confiscate, the apartheid wall confiscate or isolate many wells behind it, and this wall has its current production is 10 million cubic meters annually, but the future potential is 90 million cubic meters annually. And the amount that the West Bank actually has currently, the water supply is 180 million cubic meters, and there's 90 million cubic meters
annually.
So Zainab,
in the middle of all of this, how do the people cope? How do they manage?
Yeah, right. So the water, actually the distribution, like the average is 50%, but it varies. In some places it's less than 20 liters, which is less than the minimum yani recommended by the international law in the emergency cases. So some people really live in under a continuous emergency case. Like, for example, women and the housewives, some of them use the same water to clean the dishes, to clean the ground and to flush the toilet. And that, you know, of course, affect the people's health. Some people pay because like many areas, about 6,000 Palestinians in the West Bank are not covered by the water network. So those people have to depend on the water tankers, which is at least double the cost of the water by the network, and can be 12 times as much the water by the network. And even in, with the communities that covered by the water network, there are frequent water cuts, so people depend on water tankers.
And thank you so much,
people have
Zainab.
To dig.
This is wonderful information, and what a crisis. Thank you for the good work you're doing there at LifeSource. We appreciate your contribution. Zainab Shilafel there from LifeSource in Ramallah, one of the most highly hit areas. And Motassem, the very crucial thing she mentioned at the start here is that the area isn't in a state of drought. There shouldn't be a crisis. The crisis is purely political.
Yeah, as I told you, the Israelis, in general, the Israeli policy is holding the neck of the bottle of water in that area, and they, it allows only slight drops for the Palestinians and even for the other countries surrounding Israel. I want to tell you something surprising about that the Israel, supported by the USA, is trying to go over the passing of the River Nile. In 26 April 2012, it signed with the USAID organization an investment agreement to invest agricultural projects in the countries of the River Nile Basin, such as Tanzania, Ethiopia, Uganda, Rwanda, in order to, and these projects needs to build dams, and these dams will lessen the amount of water for Egypt and the Sudan or these Arab countries.
So not only are things being done from one side, we've now moved over to the Nile, where there's the...
And what they also are doing to steal the water from the underground reserves in Sinai also, the Israel have deep wells at the border lines between Israel and Sinai, and these wells withdraw the underground water from the Sinai so that the Bedouins there, the wells of the Bedouins there drain, and they suffer problems for their work. And this is also happens with the wells of the Palestinians in the border lines.
So you can't dig far enough to try and counteract.
Yeah, you know that.
Indeed.
Palestinians only, the depth of the Palestinian wells is only, ranges from 67 to maximum 100 meters. But the Israeli wells ranges from 1,500 to 2,000 meters. Mm-hmm. So that most of the, I know my uncles are farmers. And before coming here, they told me that their well has drained. Before being drained, before draining, it became the amount of saline increased too much, and then it became to drain.
Just completely nothing there.
Yeah.
Stay with us. I want to hear more on this. But first, this week's Global Resistance shows that the Palestinians, and you've heard some of the conditions here, living under occupation or around the world in the diaspora, the world is waking up slowly but surely to their struggle against injustice, and we hope a little of what you see inspires you.
Over 100 protesters chanted the freedom of Palestine during the under-21 women's football game between Scotland and Israel in Edinburgh. Scotland won the game 8-0. London has staged a demonstration at the Department of Culture, Media and Sport, where a letter was delivered expressing anger for UEFA's decision to hold the 2013 under-21 competition in Israel. The protesters also used the opportunity to shed light onto the illegal imprisonment of Mahmoud Sarsak, a Palestinian footballer on hunger strike. A group of activists have put Palestine back on the map in a derelict building in central London. The space has been used to run a variety of events, from film screenings, speeches and poetry, to live video calls to Palestine.
The functions of Zionism is to, one, deny access to Palestinian identity, and two, to erase Palestinian identity. And this place is doing exactly the opposite. We are restating Palestinian identity.
The abandoned building was occupied and renamed Palestine Place, despite being faced with eviction.
Modazem Dalul is still with me, and we're discussing all things water, the economy of it, the politics of it. And we were just saying before the break, in terms of the depth to which the Palestinian farmers, businessmen, etc., can drill to, does not compare to the Israelis because there's a lack of equipment, permits are not granted, and so on. But you had another point that you thought was quite interesting here.
Yeah, another point about the daily consumption of the water by the Israeli citizens. It is okay that the normal Israeli citizen consumes from 240 to 280 liters per day, but the consumption of the settler hits 700 per day. Compared with the Palestinian, as Sister Zainab said, the Palestinians doesn't have only 50 liters per day. This is half of the minimum amount decided by the World Health Organization.
And in Ramallah, as we can see from this map here, in terms of the way in which some of these areas have been completely drained of all their resources. Did Sister Zainab mention there that Ramallah has a rainfall equivalent to Berlin, as we know, not the driest city in the world, the West Bank to Paris? These areas should be plentiful. The economy should be able to flourish and grow.
Yeah, but it should be for sure, but what the Israeli do to steal waters from the wells of the Palestinians, as the Israelis have the equipment, have the political will to dig, and they don't need licenses to dig deep wells. The wells of the Palestinian, don't exceed 100 meters, but the Israeli wells are ranges from 1500 to 2000 meters. This it drains or withdraws the water, the underground water, and so that the salinity of water increases, and the toxic chemicals, toxic materials appears in water, such as chlorides and lead. The water in the Palestinian territories contains high amount of lead, which is highly toxic and highly poisonous. And this water also doesn't exist because of the
Israeli. It's been drained. It's completely gone.
Yeah.
What does this do to the economy? Because surely agricultural land is now destroyed.
Destroys the economy. A lot of farmers get give up work because they don't have enough water. If they have water, they suffer because of the poisonous water, not good for agriculture, and even for manufacturing, for factories, for example, food factories and different factories. Because of the loss or shortage of water, the needed water for industry, they sometimes give up or they don't know what to do. At least the expenses of industry became high because of the expenses, the high expenses they spent on water. And there is something important I want to mention here, that the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, mentioned in a report earlier that I want to mention some statistics.
Yes, very quickly.
That 50,000 children, about children, 50,000 children don't have, from the Palestinian territories, don't have any kind of access to water. To water resources. 150,000 have limited access, and they give example a few hours each 6 days to water resources. And the last point, 28,000 children in the Palestinian territories have health problems related to water crisis.
I think that's the perfect, quite shocking way to end things on. Mota, thank you so much. And we've come to the end of this edition of Remember Palestine. This really is a topic we could have gone on for far longer, but thank you so much for taking the time to engage with us, and a special thank you to our guests for their wonderful contribution. Until next time, on behalf of all the team, I've been Amina Taylor. Join us soon.